Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
And welcome to Cravings. It is a fairly shocking Saturday out there. Today our focus is going to be on lunch. And when I talk about lunch, I'm talking about fresh seasonal produce and a whole bunch of people in my studio here talking about things to do for lunch, one in July and some others happening around Victoria at the moment. But before we get into Cravings, I would like to pay a short personal tribute to our mentor and friend Adam Stobbs. Adam and I were not the best of buddies, we didn't hang out a lot, but we held a mutual respect for one another. He was never scared to offer his thoughts on the program, whether it was good or bad. He was always willing to lend his expertise or his opinion if he thought it would help. He was a dedicated and committed member of this great big gay family of ours, and like so many of my colleagues here at Joy, I'm shocked and saddened by his death. My thoughts and wishes, like many others, go out to his partner Yoda and to his family and friends. Long may he rest in peace. And while we talk, Adam, the last ever Allegro Non Troppo goes to air this Sunday at 11 a.m. Join Peter 40 as he honours the memory and celebrates the life of his on-air partner in music, Adam Stobbs. Many members of the Joy family will join Peter on this show, and we'll also hear from some of their guests heard over the years on Allegro. For the last time ever, listen in to Adam Stobbs as we remember him tomorrow at 11 o'clock on Joy 94.9 Allegro. We are in the middle of Radiothon, of course, and as you heard just before with Detours, they're basically matching dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Now, already $317 has been raised in donations and renewed memberships. We have some more. Shane from Melbourne is renewing his membership, so that's going to cost Macca some more money. Alistair McKenzie has made a donation of $250, so that's going to take a fair swag off this $683 I've got to raise before 2 o'clock. And David from Elstonwick has also renewed his membership. And Stephen and Michael from Kensington have bought a family membership. Stephen's already a member, so they've just chipped in some more bucks. I can't do the maths on that just yet, but keep going. Memberships can be renewed today, or you can make a donation to the station to keep us here on air. You can call 1300-JOY-949, or that's 1300-569-949 if you're using an old telephone. You can SMS 0427-JOY-949, that's 0427-569-949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. You can basically do that all the way through the program if you have questions or anything for our guests. Before we get to them, our foodie news, of course. Former Epicure editor Kylie Walker has been appointed food publisher of Australian-based Murdoch Books. Walker, who was at the head of Epicure in Melbourne here in The Age from 2000 to 2006 and most recently edited the ABC's Delicious magazine, will be in charge of a raft of food titles, from the generic ones sold in supermarkets to high-end chef-driven books by the likes of Neil Perry, Bill Granger, Frank Camora, plus Richard Cornish's Movida series. Melbourne's food scene wasn't short on excitement last week, with the opening of not one but three restaurants hoping to make a bit of a dent into the industry. South of the River Ladro opened in Prahran, Gabriel Martin's Metropolis Eating House launched in Brunswick, and Yorg, the venture between former Jacques Raymond head chef Mike Smith, ex-Church Street Enoteca sous chef Bryce Bernhardt, and front of house manager David Cristiano started training in North Fitzroy. Let's hope that the hype does meet the expectation with those three new restaurants, and do go and support them. Check them out. Hawthorne's The Undertaker has abandoned plans to reopen its upstairs fine dining restaurant after a renovation. The decision was taken with consulting chef Paul Wilson so they could concentrate instead on the revamped downstairs area, a casual dining space now known as The Social. It suits the economic environment and it seems to be what people are after, says co-owner Olivia Frawley. Despite a parting of the personal ways, Melbourne chef Andrew McConnell and his architect partner Pascal Gomez-McNabb are forging ahead in business. The pair are exploring a new business idea together, according to Pascal, and rumours that Andrew has relinquished his equity and involvement in CBD's Cumulus Link Inc. are completely inaccurate, she said. McConnell is in fact doing a book for Cumulus, and while she's busying herself on a commission to redesign St Kilda's Stokehouse. Gordon Ramsay did it at Heathrow, and now there is a world trend to put good food outlets inside immigration at international air terminals to get people through early, and that idea is coming down under. Melbourne's Movida is set to do a deal with the city's revamped international terminal, I say the city, our city, due to open next year to open a new food bar, Balpupo, by Movida. It's a new phase for the restaurant. It's basically licensing its brand and its intellectual property much in the same way that Ramsay has done. Staff will be trained by Movida, but the business and risk will belong to others. Also part of the new terminal arrangements is rumoured to be another Cafe View, part of the ever-expanding Shannon Bennett empire. The owner of... we'll come to that in just a minute because there's a bit more to get to. If I can organise my pages. Crown's General Manager of Catering Operations, David Yalouz, has handed in his notice after more than 13 years in the job. Yalouz has been with Crown since just before it opened, and for most of his time there has been second in charge to Food and Beverage Manager Walter Wagner. He says he's having a look around and he's hoping to stay in Melbourne. And Jean-Paul Prunetti of Melbourne's Francois is one of the very few restaurateurs in Australia to go beyond tokenism by introducing organic eggs right throughout his South Yarra Bistro menu, including his desserts. Whilst you may buy an omelette that tells you that it's organic free-range, not all restaurants are using free-range eggs right throughout. There's no exceptions policy has resulted in his egg costs more than doubling, but only a small price increase on some entrees. Prunetti says he feels better doing it and wishes he had done it before. In interesting news, you can go and join the Lake House. Our very good friends, Ala Wolf Tusker, are doing a Lake House at the Winter Masterclass there on Sunday, 18th of July, featuring some of Australia's top young guns, Matt Wilkinson, who is head chef of the Two Hat Circa, Adam De Silva, a very good friend of this program, who was the Age Good Food Guide Young Chef of the Year in 2008, and one of the three people behind the restaurant Coda, and Shane Delia, who is Melbourne's, shall we say, Middle Eastern influence superstar. All three will be doing masterclasses on the 18th of July, along with Nick Scher from Sher Wagyu and Tim Terry of Truffles Australis. A dairy farmer has had a bit of a fight with Coca-Cola Amatil this week. He's been pitched against soft drink giant Coca-Cola because he wants to sell his own fizzy cola flavoured milk drink at an agricultural show in Hamilton, New Zealand. The annual National Field Days are the largest agricultural show in the Southern Hemisphere, and more than 140,000 people visit the annual event that began this week. Ravel, who is from Waikato, had been hoping to launch his new product there, trying to promote a locally made milk product in a marquee dedicated to Kiwi innovation. Coca-Cola says this is a commercial contradiction because of a contract they have, and speaking on behalf of Coca-Cola, Suzanne Clarkson has said, "We haven't banned him, he's welcome to Field Days, he just can't sell his product because we have a contract that prevents him from doing so." And finally, in some weird foodie news, the owner of an Inner North Canberra restaurant has been fined more than $1,000 for allowing food to be prepared in a car park behind the business. In February 2009, a health inspector in Dixon, when she noticed meat being defrosted and prepared in an uncovered car park behind this restaurant in Canberra. In a statement of facts tendered to the ACT Magistrates Court this week, the inspector said the food was attracting wild birds. When the officer went inside, she said there was grease, decaying food and rubbish throughout the Chinese restaurant and the food preparation area was unclean. Photos tendered to the court also showed several barbecued ducks hanging off the back of a door. And finally, we congratulate James Halliday, who last week in the Queen's Birthday Honours received a nod and AM Australia Medal. There's little that James hasn't done, and of course he is recognised as one of Australia's sharpest wine minds, and we offer our congratulations. It's now 1:15. I need to breathe. Finally, we get to talk to our guests. I've got two good-looking young gentlemen sitting in front of me who are about to pop on some headphones so they can hear what we're doing because they're here to talk about, it's a couple of events, really. The theme for today's program really is lunch. And the lunch we're talking about is happening on the 11th of July, so only a couple of weeks away at the Magnolia Courtyard in Collins Quarter. And I'm pleased to welcome Ricky Hamilton, who is, I don't know, would you be the public relations person involved with this organisation?
I look after all the events at Collins Quarter.
Okay.
Public relations, yes.
Oh, there we go. We've even turned your microphone on. That's nice.
Oh, there you go.
And also joining us is Chef Michael Nunn. Michael, welcome.
Afternoon.
Now, I'll talk to you first because you cut your teeth under the very fine tutelage of Guy Grossi. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
How long ago?
I started my apprenticeship at Mario's on Brunswick Street.
But then I was there for about 2 years, and then after that I went to when the Grossies took over Florentino. Mm-hmm. I was employed as an apprentice and worked for a guy about 3 years, 1999 to 2001. So amazing chef and amazing people.
Oh, he's an extraordinary man. He has been a guest on this program several times and will be very soon. He's doing an event with Luke Mangan.
Yes, the theatre, I think.
Yeah. And I shall have both of them in to talk about it, because Guy remembers when Luke was just a pimply-faced young apprentice.
Right.
Which seems not so long ago for an old boy like me. Then you, like most chefs, took off to Britain to further your career.
I did. Yeah, it is. It's the natural path, it seems, these days. But fabulous food over in London. I've spent all of my time working for 4 years in London at various places.
The Arts Club and Berry Brothers?
Yeah, and I worked at a five-star hotel in Liverpool Street called the Great Eastern Hotel at the Aurora restaurant, which was a fantastic restaurant, and 3AA rosettes, and learned a hell of a lot about British and French cuisine, which is great.
What is it that makes us pack up our bags and go somewhere like London or France? What is it about those two cities in particular? Because most chefs that have been through the doors and sat down here have spoken of their need to go and explore what the rest of the world is doing. Why do you think it is? We've got a really strong food and beverage culture here.
Absolutely. And look, I think us as chefs, when we're cooking at a young age, we're influenced by a lot of fairly charismatic people, and the cuisine that we're cooking, I mean, I can speak from a personal sense. When I was cooking fantastic Italian cuisine at Grossi Florentino, you learn about the origins of this food, and for me, I just had to know where it was coming from and what it was all about, and to sort of get across that London was a great starting point to do that, for sure.
Okay, now Ricky, how did you get involved with Collins Quarter? Obviously, I should announce that it's one of Vernon Chalker's, part of the Vernon Chalker Empire, along with Madame Brussels and the Gin Palace.
That's right. And we've also got the Order of Melbourne as well.
Oh, I love the Order.
Addition. Yeah. I just used to drink all the time at Gin Palace.
Does that mean you're not going to offer me a job, because I think I have shares in the Gin Palace?
And one of the girls that worked there was sort of talking about Collins Quarter, this new venue, and it was actually at Doc Martens, which is a old institution for a lot of hospitality people. We used to go over there quite a bit, and had to go and check it out. So opened that 3 years ago with Vernon, and
fun. Now, he's a good man to work with.
He's a great guy. He looks after us all, and, we all know everything there is to know about a martini now, which is great.
But there is still no better martini in the world than a 1961 competition winner. It's a competition winner at the... you can have those at the Gin Palace, which is something that I do on a frequent basis. It's... the glass is, I think, rinsed with Grand Marnier. I have mine dirty and dry, as it's the only way to drink a martini, with a little bit of olive brine and anchovy stuffed olives and some really good Hendrix gin.
And they freeze a lot of the utensils as well.
Mm. It's making me want a martini now. Let's talk about this lunch, which is on the 11th of July. It's part of Mushroom Mania. Now, let's quickly run through Mushroom Mania. 1,600 chefs across Australia focusing on mushrooms from July 1 through to July 31.
That's right, yeah.
Why did you jump on board with Mushroom Mania?
Mushrooms. I mean, who doesn't love them? Carnivores and vegetarians alike, everyone loves mushrooms.
Meat for vegetarians, as they know.
Exactly, yeah. And
Michael loves the vegetarians.
Yeah. So. not a great lunch for the vegetarians to come to, this one.
I've seen the menu. There is nothing for a vegetarian on there.
It's fairly carnivorous, but that's all driven by the wine, which we'll speak about in a minute. Mm-hmm. But it's the season, Mushrooms, we're getting slippery jacks and pine mushrooms and ghost grey mushrooms and all these fantastic local mushrooms coming through, so why not use them?
Do you go and forage for mushrooms yourself?
I have done before. I haven't this year. Our previous restaurant manager, she used to forage for them. She lived out in Kyneton, and she used to forage for them, bringing them into the restaurant for us, which was great. Sadly, she's gone now, so I'm going to have to find someone else to go and do the dirty work for me.
Oh, you should get out and do it yourself.
Yeah, I know.
And mushrooms are quite dangerous if people are out picking mushrooms themselves. Obviously, they need to be very aware of is it the yellow stinker or...
Yeah, well, I mean... I wouldn't pick mushrooms if I wasn't with someone that actually knew quite a bit about it. I mean, I think it's quite important to point that out, that they can look alike, the edible and the very dangerous ones. So yeah, be careful for sure.
Do you take someone else so you can test it on them? Or?
Yeah. Take one of your least favourite friends.
So if I get invited, I'm going to, like, you know, stay away.
I'm speaking with Michael Nunn, who is the chef from Collins Quarter, and Ricky Hamilton, who's here to join him to talk about a lunch they're doing on the 11th of July. It is just after 20 minutes past one. Don't forget, you can join in the Radiothon. Any donations that we can get to take us up to the $1,000 that Detours didn't make, I reckon we're about halfway to our $600 already. So you can phone 1-300-JOY-949. You can SMS 0427-JOY-949. Email on air at joy.org.au. Or send me a little tweet, cravings_JOY949, and we can read those on air as well. I do have to say a quick hello to Stuart and his friend Kate, who are off to Shepparton to party. Not one of my chosen destinations to party, but I am sure you guys will have a cracking time. So, this menu is quite an interesting little one. Smoked duck breast with the crispy lug or crispy leg, pickled hon shimiji. Now, I'm assuming that they're mushrooms.
They are cultivated mushroom, not a wild mushroom, but yeah,
Japanese.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
How do they compare to that very other famous Japanese mushroom?
The shiitake.
The shiitake.
Very different.
Right.
Certainly in flavour. I mean, shiitake, when you pan fry a shiitake, you get a really nutty sort of flavour from it, whereas a hon shimeji is a lot more subtle. Mm-hmm. But they're probably a lot more porous, so that's why we're going to pickle them. And they sort of, I don't know, in that real Japanese style, you get a slippery sort of texture out mm-hmm. of them, and that's sort of what we're going for with this dish.
And a nice bit of Strzelecki blue cheese in there.
Absolutely. It was purely because of the wine. We mm-hmm. do a tasting with all the wines, and we tasted Strzelecki blue with this, and we just thought, well, we've got to do something with Strzelecki blue for sure.
Now, the wines are from Wild Duck Creek Estate, and winemaker Liam Anderson will be joining on the day to talk about those wines. How do you go about, either of you can answer this, how do you go about choosing those wineries that you're going to work with? And are they, you know, are they wines that are on your list already?
Well, we just look for wineries that we really respect and that give us a bit of inspiration, really, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't sort of, you know, not rarely. I think Wild Duck is the only winery that's actually come and approached us and said we'd like to do it. And we chose them because we just really love the wines, you know. They're big, big, bold wines.
Which is good for stick to your ribs, winter food, of which some of this is.
Absolutely.
If I could safely say. A venison carpaccio with coffee, smoked sea salt and crispy gnocchi. Again, we can see the mushrooms in there. How do you make a carpaccio out of venison? I guess the same way as you would with beef.
Exactly,
you?
Yeah. Perfect for carpaccio venison because it's so lean. And, you know, it can take on a lot of interesting flavours.
Mm-hmm. Why coffee?
Again, the wine. You know, we do a tasting with all the wines that we have for these lunches. We do a mm-hmm. tasting, and I take tasting notes from them. I try to be inspired by the particular wine to come up with the dish. And coffee was a really strong note in that particular wine. So
which is the Shiraz?
The Shiraz, the Spring Flat. Yeah. And we sort of got a bit of smoke from the oak as well, mm-hmm. so that's why we've done the smoked sea salt with it.
Nice. Mm. You're also doing a braised veal, crispy lamb sweetbreads. Let's explain to those who aren't familiar, because I was speaking to somebody about sweetbreads, and she said, oh, is that the brains?
It's not, and no. I hate telling people about sweetbreads, because there's no nice way to say it. It's a gland, essentially, and that doesn't sound...
It is the lymph gland from around the neck, isn't it?
Or the pancreatic gland, yeah. Right. These particular ones will be the lymph gland from around the neck, but you can get them from both parts of the animal, so... Mm.
Mm. Now, I have to make a confession. When I was doing my apprenticeship as a chef 150 years ago, I had a dislike for meat and a hate for offal that was extraordinary, to the point where one of my classes at trade school, the guys in my class were chasing me down the corridor, pegging offal at me because they knew that I was going to lean out the window and be sick. And I've since discovered a bit of as my taste has matured, a love for offal. And I was somewhere, I think it was through this year's or last year's Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, where I had some sweetbreads that were crumbs, and they tasted like chicken nuggets.
Yeah, it's probably a good tasting note, actually, yeah. I can completely empathise. I used to hate offal with a passion when I was younger. I just didn't understand why anyone would want to eat those parts of any particular animal, you know. Like,
I still can't come at a couple of bits. I can't eat a heart.
Yeah.
That's beyond my capability, and I can't do tripe.
Right.
There's something about the texture and the taste of tripe that does actually make me almost gag.
They are mental hurdles, though. That's the whole thing with offal, I think. It's built up in a lot of people's head, and I think they do you know, there's a stigma behind them. And once you can get over that sort of thing, and I think as you sort of touched on, as you mature and you your palate matures, certainly you develop a taste for those sort of things. Yeah.
If we haven't made you sick, I am talking to Michael Nunn, who is from Collins Quarter, the chef, and Ricky Hamilton, both in here talking about a lunch they're doing in July. And I wanted to talk to the guys because there's a lot of focus on regional produce, and there is a lot of focus on those warm wintering foods. And we will talk more about that in just 1 second. Now, we do have a message from Peter Stevenson, who's talking about Metropolis Eating House, which is something that I was speaking about very early, a new restaurant that only opened in the last week. Pete's been twice to Metropolis this week, and Gabrielle's food is outstanding. They went on Wednesday night just after opening. Gabrielle told them all about the food. The wine list is not large, but well-priced, and a great mix of French and Australian. The chocolate dessert was special for Pete. A deep-fried panache of chocolate coated with French gingerbread. Now I'm hungry. So, yes, thank you, Pete, for that very extensive email about Metropolis Eating House. Do get along and check it out. Back to you guys. So, I guess I should ask, is there still bookings available for the lunch?
There are. Not too many, though.
We can't talk about how much it is, but we know it's not, you know, your $20 Palma lunch that you're going to have on a Sunday.
No, it's pretty fancy, but it's not extraordinary, out of, you know.
And people can go to a website, or do they need to book via the email address?
Well, they can either email me or give us a call at Collins Quarter.
You better give them the email address at least.
It's Enrique@collinsquarter.com.
That's your stage name.
That's your stage name.
That's my work name.
Work's your stage. Yeah.
Now, let's get quickly back, because we're fast running out of time with all this hoo-ha. 1,600 restaurants, cafes, bistros, pubs and clubs around Australia have joined in mushroom mania. I know we've sort of talked about it, but why do we need this celebration of mushrooms? I know that they're the perfect food, it's the perfect time of the year, but why don't we do this for Brussels sprouts?
It is done with other foods. I mean, pork stars, probably a perfect example. The Australian Pork Association have basically got pork stars together, and this is a similar sort of faction, I suppose. Why do we need it? It's all just celebrating food, as far as I'm concerned, you know, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
There is no greater celebration in life. That is on the 11th of July, Collins Quarter. As you heard, you can phone Enrique, his stage name, 9650-8500, or you can jump on the website and it will direct you to an email address. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I do have to get along because we've got a bit of money to raise. And, oh, here you go. Now I'm breaking things. I shall see you at the lunch.
Great.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
We have been talking about lunch, and we need to talk about, well, more lunches that are happening this week and next, because Put Victoria on Your Table is led by the makers of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, sponsored by Regional Development Victoria, and is celebrating food and wine of Victorian prominence. Venues have drawn on Victoria's bountiful produce to dish up their interpretation of a traditional winter favourite, the roast. Events range from Sunday lunch roast to five-course roast degustations to hands-on roasting workshops. There has been a program of more than 50 roast-inspired events. This will continue for the next week or more across Victorian restaurants, wineries and other venues celebrating the Put Victoria on Your Table philosophy, supporting local farmers and food producers. And I have sitting in front of me two people who are going to be involved in this, one tomorrow and Tuesday, and the other next Saturday. Vicky Pepos is from the Sweet Greek in Oakley, and welcome.
Thank you, Pete.
And Simon Turner is from Campari House in Hardware Lane. You're the head chef?
Yeah, that's right, Pete.
Excellent. Welcome to Cravings. I wanted to talk about this because it's one of those things that we take for granted. Everybody thinks they can chuck a leg of pork or a leg of lamb or a lump of beef into the oven and have it turn out with a few spuds and some roasted pumpkin as a roast. But you guys are taking it quite a bit further. Vicky, I'll talk to you first because you're doing a doing Zorba the Roast next Saturday, which is drawing on your Greek heritage.
That's right, yeah.
Tell us about the event.
Well, we have joined together with a farmer from Echuca called Lamb Direct, and they are delivering to my door on Saturday some beautiful cuts of lamb for the cooking class.
Mm-hmm.
With Greek cooking, we often use a lot of the cheaper, sort of cheaper cuts of meat. Mm-hmm. And one of the a few recipes that I'm making roasts with is the neck, the shoulder, and we're wrapping
them. Yeah, they've got all the flavor.
Yeah, we're wrapping them with vine leaves to retain moisture, mm-hmm. you know, to seal in the juices, and stuffing them with cheese and lots of oregano and beautiful extra virgin Greek olive oil and all the rest of it. Yeah,
I'm getting really, really hungry. Let's talk briefly about the sweet Greek in a moment. But Simon, you're doing on Tuesday, the 22nd of June, a toast to Campari House, which is a roast event, and also a roast lamb for two next Sunday. Now, this is an ideal thing for those listeners who are just themselves and a partner and want to learn how to roast for two and not have to eat leftover roast meat all week.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Pete. The whole concept came about with the busy couple who are both working and mm-hmm. Haven't got a lot of time and don't have a lot of space in a small apartment. So what we're trying to do is take the size of a roast down and use small cuts, beautiful tender baby vegetables that are grown all around Victoria and make it happen a little bit faster than people perceive roasts.
Because it can be a 3 or 4 hour production in the end, can't it?
It can be, yeah, but the whole concept of this is to get it done in eating and having a glass of wine within an hour, so
right up my alley.
Definitely.
Vicky, we'll go back to you. The Sweet Greek, you actually run a cooking school.
That's right, yep, Greek cooking classes in Oakley, right in the heart of Hellenic Melbourne. Can't get any further.
Can't get much more Greek, can you?
Definitely not. We're a 1 minute walk from the market. So we've got cooking classes virtually every weekend. At the moment, I've got the winter classes on, which incorporate the roast mm-hmm. Campaign and various workshops throughout the year as well.
So how did you develop this love affair with good produce and taking those very strong cultural identities of Greek cuisine and bringing that together to create the school? What drove you to that? Are you a chef?
No, I'm not actually, but I am a cook. So I don't have the qualifications.
Well,
I have
it as Maggie Beer, but I love her.
I did go to William Anglis, but I didn't go out and then practice as a chef. But I've always had a passion for it, and it's just been passed down through the bloodlines from, you know, grandmother, mother, mother-in-law, aunties, throughout all the women of my family. So it was just something that I've always had a passion for, kept going back and forwards from different industries. And then
because your background is science and finance.
That's right, yeah, and ended up in food every single time. So I just thought, I am following my heart here, and, you know, this is the direction I'm going to take it. So that's why it was created.
And Simon, let's talk a bit about how you ended up at Campari House.
Sure.
Give us a snapshot of your career to date.
Many and varied. I've travelled most of the world, worked in different places, especially England, Japan, Canada and the States.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Campari House goes, I've just been on a hitchhiking journey along South America for 14 months and the job sort of was a referral and landed. The Campari House hadn't opened, it had been closed for a long time, so I was the person who got everything together food-wise and mm-hmm. started pushing on. Only been open for about 10 months, so things are going along quite nicely.
Good, good. So only 10 months?
Campari House has been open for only 10 months, yeah.
And I was speaking to Michael Nunn, who's from Collins Quarter, just before you guys came in, about this need for chefs to pack up bags and take themselves to the other side of the world to seek inspiration or just for perspiration. What is it that that drove you to go overseas? Was it to develop your career or just to learn more about other cuisines? What's the...
Definitely. To learn about cuisines, I think, is a vital part of being a chef. I think you're selling yourself short a little bit if you, with all due respect to all cultures, foods, Greek, for instance, Chinese, Japanese, mm-hmm. I think you get the most clear picture when you travel. It's a lot of fun as well. You pick up a lot of cultural differences, which, you know, helps with acceptance, helps with people understanding the cuisine that you're trying to put through, which is, you know, technically termed modern Australian.
Which is such an interesting term, is it not?
And very broad. Mm. Yeah, it is that, you know, modern Australian pubs, modern Australian fine dining areas. But I think that the biggest emphasis is on fresh produce for Australian cuisine. And I think that any chef who's not really down with that idea is going to sort of leave themselves short, because we've got a clientele that are quite intelligent in Melbourne. There's a lot of competition. So I think it, travelling abroad, seeing what some people need to cook with is interesting for us to appreciate how much we've got in Victoria, especially with fresh produce.
Oh, there's such diversity, and I'll come back to that with you in a moment. Have you taught at Holmes Glen and CAE?
And I still do.
You still do?
At CAE I am. Yeah.
What do you teach?
Greek cooking there as well. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, I run as part of their curriculum, I'm involved with their Greek cooking classes there. Mm-hmm. So I run mainly phyllo pastry workshops there as well.
Because that stuff is really hard to work with,
I tell you. It is hard, yeah. But I've got some secret cheat techniques that my grandmother and some aunties in my family showed me.
Can you give us any hints on air?
Well, I have to show you. It's sort of like, it's definitely use the stick, the big pole, not the rolling pin.
Right.
A long, thin broomstick dowel, which enables you to get it wider and thinner.
Mm. And what if they're a bit stuck together and you've bought them from the supermarket and they've clearly been frozen and you're unwrapping and you've just got a mess? You can't fix that, can you?
Well, is this with the store-bought phyllo pastry?
Yeah, yeah.
It's difficult because
Do I look like I would make my own phyllo pastry?
You can. You would be surprised what you could actually do, because there's been a lot of guys that have rocked up in classes and gone, I have no idea about how to do this. And then they've walked out making the best spanakopita ever. Better than me.
Spanakopita. Now, once a class is done at the Sweet Greek, you'll then sit down around a large table and eat and drink and enjoy the conviviality.
Yep. Lunch is everything that we've cooked on the day. I bring out some Greek wines as well, some aretina, a couple of shotties of ouzo maybe.
Oh, my gosh. And this is lunchtime.
This is lunchtime.
I can only imagine everyone will be pissed by the afternoon.
It's the only way to do it.
Mm. Now, Simon, tell us a bit more about the cuisine at Campari House.
The cuisine at Campari House is based on fresh produce. It's sort of slid towards modern Italian. We have a big pizza section, but we've got quite a comprehensive menu that ranges on the four levels that we have at Campari House. But the emphasis is in fresh-made pasta, homemade everything, ice cream, sorbets, breads. We infuse our own salts and oils. We do everything from scratch, basically. I've got a very strong team of chefs, and we're quite passionate about putting fresh, homemade stuff on the table. So it gives it that humble, respectful edge and something a little bit different along the strip that we're in.
Yeah. So now you're in down there in Highway Lane, which is not the easiest place to find.
No. Just look for McDonald's.
Ew. That's disgraceful. We don't like McDonald's at all. And you talked before about modern Australian cuisine, and it's quite interesting if we look at modern Australian cuisine where there is a fusion of you know, a whole bunch of different regional cuisines, but then you bring in things like molecular gastronomy or the breaking down the components of food and recreating them back to trying to be the same thing. How much has that sort of Ferran Adria and Donny Andrea's school of thought impacted on the way that you prepare food?
I think to the consumer in Australia, it hasn't really been noticed as much. But for chefs, I think definitely the science background of modern gastronomy is very, very vital in what we're putting on tables, even in a pub. Base techniques mean you can use different ingredients to do the same process that might have been done the same for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Slight variances of that can come up with a product using gastronomy and modern molecular science that's a lot more interesting and pretty tricky for people to eat. It gives sometimes a lightness that might not have been able to have done before, mm-hmm. or sometimes a flavour that might not have ever matched unless it's at a molecular level combined properly. So it for chefs, it gives a lot of opportunity for new technique, which means we're continually learning and putting on still a decent, humble offering for a guest as far as food goes. But most chefs that I know, regardless of what level they're at, all are interested in one form or another of the background of Ferran Adria's or even Juan Maria Arzac before that.
Mm-hmm.
They've massively influenced most of the world.
So would we find a foam or a sand or a dirt or a sous vide dish on the menu?
Yes. We We sort of use that more for specials. Our specials board isn't really just to get rid of what's in the fridge.
How should you let on that secret?
Well, sucked in for those who don't. But we actually try and plan our specials so that they have a higher impact and there's something above what we offer. So if there's going to be any molecular gastronomy or anything like that, we sort of sell out on the specials board.
Okay.
But we've used balsamic vinegar foams and stuff like that to go with saltimbocca, which is a classic Italian dish, and just sort of ramping it up a little bit. And yeah, but from generally day to day, we use a lot of smears and a lot of micro herbs and stuff, which have been very popular in modern gastronomy.
And look, we're seeing that now with amateur cooks on MasterChef.
Definitely.
Using smears and micro herbs that can't go onto Qantas planes.
Yep. That's right.
If anybody happened to see the episode in the week, the nonsense, the ad for Qantas, which it was, I almost had to turn off. I'm actually quite a whore for MasterChef. I've been known to not leave the house. And either of you could answer this question. How much do you think the phenomena of MasterChef, we talk about this a lot, has impacted the way that people eat or the way that people want to learn to cook? Has there been an impact for either of you, do you think?
For me, definitely. It's gone both ways for restaurants, I think. It's nice to have people gaining a little bit of knowledge when they go out to dinner. It's nice to have people attempting things at home, and it's fantastic. But occasionally, you might get the little bit of a knowledge is a dangerous thing, so that
yes,
a few of the diners might articulate that MasterChef didn't do it that way, but you've got to take the good with the bad, and I think the exposure to what chefs do is a fantastic thing for the industry.
Yeah. And it has become very much a measuring stick for the way people think about food. Vic, with you, do people come into the classes and sort of talk about what they saw on the program?
Definitely, all the time. And, you know, especially with George Kalambaris' presence,
yes,
they're just constantly, you know, going, oh, he did this and he did it like that and this and that. So it's actually been a really positive, it's had a very positive effect. Just with the interest and the passion that people are coming into the classes with, they're just there and they really want to know and they want to get their hands into it, and they're not afraid or intimidated as much, I feel.
Right.
They're ready to roll up their sleeves and get into it.
So they're probably more understanding about ingredients and methods of cooking than perhaps we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep, and processes of the way food is produced as well, you know, cheeses and a whole stack of various ingredients that, you know, people wouldn't use in their vocab, 10 years ago. Mm. So, yeah, definitely.
Have you thought of branching out away from Greek food and looking at other passions?
I have, but at the moment, you know, I'm turning it inwards, and it's almost an education, a re-education process for me as well. And, Simon mentioned before, traveling having influenced the way that you cook and the way that you perceive what you're doing and the foods that you're putting on the table. And, you know, Greece, although may not have, there's a few places that have hit that molecular gastronomy, you know, fine dining level, but it's still more the, you know, home family style cooking, putting simple things on the table and making focus on good ingredients, fantastic ingredients, and, you know, locally produced, which is, I guess, coming back to what we're doing here.
And I think this is just a personal observation with those very traditional cuisines like Greek cuisine, like Italian, for example, that whilst there will be some very small influence from a modern gastronomy level, those very premises of those cuisines, which is about family, about sharing, about the experience of dining rather than tasting and eating, is probably never going to die.
That's right. Mm. Absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah. God, that was a very profound statement. Guys, unfortunately, this show has gone too fast. It is time for us to say goodbye. Simon, thank you for coming in. And the website for Campari House?
www.camparihouse.com.au.
And Vicky, the website for The Sweet Greek?
TheSweetGreek.com.au.
They were too easy. And of course, if you want more, you can go to the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, melbournefoodandwine.com.au, to find more events happening till the end of June for Put Victoria on Your Table. And of course, this very inspiring roast collection that is running until the end of June.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.